Okay, we're going to begin Perek Tesayin, chapter 16, which in these little Tanyas is page 42. All right, so in this Perek, Alter Rebbe continues a few important rules with regard to a Beinoni. Let me just give a little introduction to the first one. One is that although a Beinoni by definition, right, we say there's someone who has a Nefesh HaBamistl, and Nefesh HaBamistl has a voice, and it's still going to be there, and the struggle will still be there, and therefore Beinoni by definition is someone who controls his applications. He controls the Machshava, Dibur, Maisa, thought, speech, and action, right? But in order to do that, and that's what he's going to explain now, one of the things that's important is, in other words, one would think that a Benyani is just someone that he's not intrinsically changed at all. Right? In other words, the essence of his character is the same, it's just that he does the right thing. Mm-hmm. Huh? No, I didn't think that. No. Why?
He's working all the time.
Right, and therefore...
And that's why we're striving for it.
Right? Yeah, but so what does that do? No, we're striving to control ourselves. We're striving to have the choice. In other words, it is true, I'm trying to separate the issues. It is true that the fundamental concept of a Beinoni is the application of choice, not to do, say, and think the wrong thing, right? And only to do good things. But he says in order to do that, and he's alluded to before when he talks about davening and all that, that it isn't completely true. In other words, that the Beinoni does, in order to do that, in order to reach being a Beinoni, which is part of our aspiration, is that you've got to make a dent in your actual personality also. Your world has to shift. Now, it's never going to shift completely. That's the point here, as I said before. We've talked about this briefly, but it's going to go into it more, right? Now, it's not enough for the Beinoni just to fight his Yetzer Hara and to fill all the 613 mitzvahs, right? But actually, what he needs is, he needs zichuch, they call it. Zichuch means he needs to refine himself. In order to be a Beinoni, you need to refine yourself. You need to be a more refined person. You need to be a Zichuch. Yeah. Which means a lot of hard work, like you said, right? So it's hard work. But hard work is not just about each moment making the right choice. It's hard work to become a different kind of person. It's hard work to refine our brain, our heart, which are the most important sort of drivers within ourselves, and to, in order to be able to control our nature, in order to control our personality. Now, it's true, the person doesn't fundamentally change their midas, their emotions. Because midas are very hard to change. Only a real tzaddik can actually completely transform their midas. But we can make a dent, we can make them more refined, so that we're able to govern them better. Okay, so that's the important thing. Let's see how this plays out of here. This is a big rule in the service of Hashem for a Beinoni. Ha'ikir hu limshoil. So ha'ikir, the main thing is v'lishloit ala teva shebechol lasmoli. The main thing is to rule and to control the nature, the personality, which is in the left ventricle, which is in other words the emotions and the impulses of the Nefesh HaBamis, the animal soul. And how does it work? We said it works with a bit of help of Hashem, Alidei Oyer Hashem, through the light of God, HaMeir, which shines with Nefesh and a kiss to the godly soul, Shabamoyach in the brain, right? Because what we said before is that the voice of the heart, the voice of the Nefesh HaBamis, which is in the heart, which is primarily emotional, pops up first in response to an issue. It's faster and it's stronger. Right away, the Nefesh HaKis argues from the brain, in other words, to make the right decision, but it needs that push from Hashem's help in order to tip the scale, right? That was the third judge, as we said. The Lishloit al Alev, and also to control the heart. We've got to be able to control our impulses, our temptations, our taivas, and so on and so forth. But it works, as we said, it works by actually hard work, and it works by changing and shifting. How does it work? He says, it works because you've got to change, you've got to work with the brain. How does it work with the brain? כשמזבוינן במויחי, when you contemplate in your brain, בגדולס אין סוף ברוך. So here's the point of this of part of this perek. It comes through hisbonus, through reflection, through understanding, through meditation, through deep thinking, surrounding the concept of Gedulas Hashem, the greatness of God, right? Which is what most of Chassidus is about, right? that's the reality. It's the bittul of the world. I mean, in order to understand the greatness of God, we also have to understand the insignificance of the world, how the world is really... What's that?
I'm listening.
No, I'm not only talking about the messed up madness that is going on today.
No, I was thinking about how hard that is.
Of course it's
if
right.
You're trying to change, dent yourself, and
yeah.
That's what you have to do.
Yeah. Now, the first part of what he explains it is how it works ideally. Right? Ideally, it means in order to change the heart a little bit, in order to have a dent in our personality, we have to give birth to Avas Hashem, to love of Hashem. Which means it's not only about reflecting on the greatness of Hashem, but reflecting the greatness of Hashem to a point where we're going to see in a second, I'll do it inside, but to a point where it gives birth to real love of Hashem. Right? Which is why, by the way, davening is such an important part of Tanya. Because that's where you do it. I mean, you do it before, right? I mean, the structure of Chabad Yeshivas, right, was always, especially since Rebbe Rashab, was to learn, although learning, according to the Gemara, the mitzvah of learning Torah comes after davening, but the schedule, or at least part of the schedule, to learn Chassidus was before davening. Because that's the idea. You have to learn before davening, you have to think, you have to, and then the ideal structure was you learn the concepts, and then you reflect on them before you daven, right? Which is a very, very integral part of davening. There was a Chassid, I can't remember who it was, I think it was Rabbi Hillel Parasha, that a person came to him and he said to him, he has a problem. Because when he reflects, when he spends a lot of time before davening, deeply thinking and reflecting on what he's learned, it works really well. And he actually becomes awakened and he's really sort of making a dent and he's developing this emotional attachment to Hashem. But then when he davens, it doesn't flow so much into the davening. So Rabbi Hillel Parasha said to him, what do you care if you daven before you daven? Meaning, in other words, it doesn't matter. If you reach the goal before you actually daven, it's fine. I'm not that he was davening, he was mumbling the words. But it wasn't as good as the reflection before davening. But that's the point. The point is, reflection through davening, davening itself is about, if you look at the words, is about, till we get to the Amidah, is really about reflecting on the greatness of Hashem, how the Malachim praise Hashem, and our bottle to Hashem. And all of that, of course, ties into one of the main ingredients of Chassidus, which came, Chassidus Chabad, particularly, which I think the Mittler Rebbe writes, or the Tzemach Tzedek writes, that the entire Chassidus came for one thing, which is the Alter Rebbe's chiddush, so to speak, the Alter Rebbe's depth, I should say, in the concept of Achdus Hashem, the oneness of Hashem. We learn that one of the mitzvahs, the first mitzvahs of the Torah is Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Hashem is one. And that can mean many things. It can mean the belief in Hashem that everything comes from Hashem. It can mean that He's indivisible. The Alter Rebbe took it to a new depth, and that is that not is indivisible or that everything comes from him, that there is nothing besides him, really. Which is another, we have to understand what that means. So all that is part of these bundles, and we understand his greatness, he fills the world, he surrounds the world, all these tremendous depth that we learn about in Chassidus, all for that one thing, to understand the oneness of Hashem, and therefore the oneness of Hashem, how everything is really part of his reality, and therefore everything that hides his reality is really nothing and insignificant, and keeping us away from connecting to him. And therefore, when you do that long enough, and you think about that, you reflect about that, you attract it to him, you want to become connected to him, and you want to be disconnected from anything else that's standing in the way, right? So that's what he says. He says, Keshem yizboinim b'moichai, when he reflects in his brain, b'gedulas ein sof baruch hu, the greatness of Hashem. And he does this through chochma and bina. But the point then is, l'hoilid mi b'nosai, he gives birth from his bina, from his deep understanding. Ruach Das, a spirit of Das, which we learned in the beginning of Tanya. Das means when you become completely connected and immersed and one with the concept. And what that does is that your Ruach Das will, the Yiras Hashem b'moichai, will create a aura of Hashem in your brain. Now, it's interesting, when he talks about Yirah, now there's two emotional mitzvahs in terms of connecting to Hashem. There's Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem, Love Hashem and Fear of Hashem. Chassidus is full of different levels of love, different levels of fear. But over here he says fear in the brain and love in your heart. So what he means is there's two types of fears. There's a fear which is in your heart also, but fear is more a perspective, in other words, right? I'll give you an example. When you... love is always an emotional thing in the heart. When you love something, it's because you feel for it, right? Fear can also be in the brain, meaning it's like an awe, like you're scared, but it's an intellectual scaredness. For example, let's say there was a recall of Panadol because they found in 5 Panadol packs a poison or something, right? I'm just saying this happened once in America with Panadol, right? So you wouldn't buy it. You wouldn't buy Panadol for a long time until it was verified there's nothing wrong with it, right? Why? Because you're scared to, because just in case it's contaminated. Doesn't mean you walk around petrified, you're not having a panic attack, right? It's just a reality in your brain, right? Where love is different, love is mamash a heart thing. How love, when you love something, means you have a feeling for it, right? Anyway.
So go back one step, please. He said,
fear
in your brain.
Yeah, so I'm sorry, I stopped middle sentence. Yeah. So the first thing you do is you've got to think about this greatness of Hashem. What does that do? It results in two things. First of all, through Bina, you give birth to a spirit of Das, which in turn can then cultivate a perspective of awe, of Yira, of fear of Hashem in your brain, right? And what will that do? Liyoy Sur Mera, it'll motivate you to go away from anything that's bad, meaning not to any Aveira. The Araisa Udarabana, whether it's biblical or it's rabbinic. Afilu Isur Kal Shel Divrei, even a very light transgression, Chas V'Shalom. Why? Because anything that's against Halacha, against Shulchan Aruch, would be keeping you away from Hashem, right? And it gives you, now I'll explain this in a second, also it gives you the Avas Hashem, hopefully what you reflected upon and you really went through the thinking process, it will give you a love of Hashem in your heart, B'chol HaYamoni, in the right ventricle, which is the headquarters of the Nefesh HaLakis, right? Which will then in turn motivate you to do, you know, good things. B'chasheka v'chafetze, with great appetite, with great desire, with great yearning. L'dovka boi t'klif to Hashem. B'kiyum ha-mitzvahs, with the fulfillment of mitzvahs, d'araisa d'rabbanan, the Talmud Torah k'neged kulam, and especially the learning of Torah, which is above all the mitzvahs. Now, what did he just say now? He said like this. He said that in order to do a Beinoni, you can't just wake up one morning and make a commitment, I'm going to control my machshava dibur ha-mitzvahs. It doesn't work like that. You could, but, and it works partially like that in the Beinoni we talked about before, the non-serving Beinoni, right? The Lo Yavod, they're the one that's just cold and diligent naturally. Although he says later in this prayer, even he needs a bit of, he needs a bit of work and davening and all that. But okay. But for the most part, person who's naturally by default has lots of temptations and lots of taivas and desires for this world, you can't just decide all of a sudden never to choose them and to choose only things that bring you closer to Hashem. You've got to work on your essential personality. So therefore, you've got to give birth. What will really ignite, what will really motivate and inspire the journey of a Beinoni and help him to win the fight each time a temptation comes along, each time a feeling of anger comes along, each time a feeling of indulgence comes along, each time a Yetzirah comes along to do something wrong, it needs that Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem, fear of Hashem and love of Hashem, right? You've got to actually fear Hashem and love Him. So it becomes your world, in other words, right? That's part of what's happening when that happens. That's why even the Beinoni name, the real Beinoni name, even the Hasidim, the Rebbe said about it in his Beinoni, he had a struggle, but his world was different because he had that love of Hashem and fear of Hashem, right? Now he said that I'll soon define also what it means, but he said, like I said, that how does this all work? It works through hisbananus, real reflection in the greatness of Hashem, understanding the greatness, truly understanding, a deep understanding of the greatness of Hashem as much as a human being can possibly understand, which will inspire, he said two things. It will inspire an awe, intellectual awe in the brain, which will keep him away from doing anything wrong, whether it's a biblical prohibition or a rabbinic prohibition or even a slight rabbinic prohibition and so on and so forth. And it will inspire love in his heart, which will then motivate him and motivate him to do mitzvahs, to do good things. So what he's saying is an interesting thing, that fear keeps you away from doing something wrong. Love motivates you to do something good. Now he mentioned this very briefly in early in Tanya, and he mentioned it later as well, that there's this concept that the two mitzvahs of Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem, Yiras Hashem, fear of Hashem, inspires Sur Mira, in other words, the keeping of the 365 negative commandments, whereas the love of Hashem motivates you to do the 248 positive commandments, right? That's what always it says in Tanya. What's the reason? Because in other words, we know that when you do an Aveira, you are being distant from Hashem, therefore you don't want to eat non-kosher because you learned how great Hashem is, and you don't want to, you're scared to do anything, or you're not scared in a childish sense, but you're distant from me, you don't want to become distant from him in any way, so therefore you don't do anything that is wrong, that in his eyes is wrong. That's motivated by the idea of Yiras Hashem. And then, what do you want to do? You love him, so you want to do things that please him, right? Okay, that's what it always says. The truth is, we have to really understand what that means, because it's not so simple. Every mitzvah slois asei is also an asei. The Gemara says that any time you have the temptation to transgress a mitzvah slois asei, and you don't, it's as if you have fulfilled the mitzvah. Right? Now, before we get there, what we said before, of course, is true. Generally speaking, mitzvah lois aseh is to keep us away from things that disconnect us from Hashem, right? So, for example, just so I understand, before we get to this deeper idea, if you want to put food in a beautiful plate, right? You want to put a beautiful piece of chocolate cake in a beautiful china dish, but the dish is dirty, it's not going to be very appetizing, right? So, putting the cake there is not worth anything, so to speak, right? It's not very tasty, it's not very attractive. So if you want to put cake in a plate, you've got to make sure that the plate is clean, right? So on a very basic idea, a basic level, that's how we explain the negative commandments and the positive commandments. Every mitzvah brings a divine light into the world. Every mitzvah creates a bond between us and Hashem, right? So it brings us close to Hashem. However, that bond has to take place in a context which is conducive. And the world is full of dirt, it's full of klipot, it's full of sitra achra. And if we do things that Hashem doesn't want us to do, we're further engaging in the klipot and the sitra achra, right? So therefore, on a basic level, lo yaseh is to remove the dirt, mitzvah seh is to bring down the light. Okay. It's not so simple, because we do learn, both in the revealed part of Torah and in Chassidus, how sometimes a mitzvah lo yaseh can actually bring even a greater light, a more transcendent light. It's not for now to explain why, but that's what it explains. And just generally, every time we overcome something and we don't do what Hashem doesn't want us to do, it says, Yashav, the Gemara says, Yashav v'le avar aveira. If a person sits and doesn't do an aveira, it's like he's done a mitzvah. Right? So a person's hungry and he walks past the store and he really wants to eat a sandwich and knows it's not kosher. And he says, no, I'm not going to do it. Hashem doesn't want me to do it. He's done a mitzvah. Not only has he kept himself away from aveira, it's like he's done a mitzvah. Similarly, if a person decides he's not going to do a mitzvah saseh, the man decides one day he's not putting on tefillin. It's true, yes, he didn't bring the light into the world, but he also rebelled against Hashem. Right? So he didn't have it. So in other words, sometimes you can have love of Hashem, which will also motivate not doing an Aveira. And you can have fear of Hashem that will motivate doing a mitzvah. Right? So there's many ways to explain that. But nevertheless, the two things are different. And in fact, the truth is like this. The truth is that both these things are in both lois aseh and aseh. Sorry. In other words, like this. You do any mitzvah, let's say even a mitzvah saseh, right? Any mitzvah saseh has two parts to it. Let's say you light Shabbos candles. You put on mezuzah, put on tefillin, right? There's, even though it's a positive commandment that you have to do, but there's also like a there's always a lois aseh aspect and a mitzvah aseh aspect. So the lois aseh aspect is the technicalities, the halacha. You know, I've got to write the aleph and the mezuzah like this, because if it's not, has the shape, I haven't done the mitzvah. So it's more like the, how to make sure this is going to work, right? That's not, if you think about it, that's not inspired so much by love. That's inspired by fear. or all, right? Like, I've got to do this right, otherwise I'm not going to be happy. Yeah? But then there's the assay of the mitzvah. There's the feeling, you know, I'm doing this mitzvah, I have simcha, I have joy in this mitzvah, I'm loving the love of the mitzvah. Why? Because I know this mitzvah is bringing me closer to Hashem. It's bonding me with Hashem, and therefore I'm going to buy not a mezuzah that's just technically okay, I'm going to buy a nicer mezuzah. The idea of hidur mitzvah, the idea of doing a mitzvah nicely. I'm going to spend extra money on the mitzvah like I would on my furniture, because this is really what's important, not so much my furniture, right? That kind of thing, yeah? So that's the asay part of the mitzvah. Or the excitement, or the learning about mezuzah before I put it up, or the you know, when you do the melulav to do it, you know, all these things. That's the mitzvah's asay of the mitzvah. And that's driven by love. Because I love it so much, I love him so much, I'm not going to just make sure I'm doing it correctly. I'm going to, right? Now, you can have one without the others, and that's why every mitzvah requires a combination. That's why every mitzvah is real service of Hashem. Because sometimes a person can really love the mitzvah, and he's so excited, he's learned about lulav for 10 weeks before Sukkot, and he's all inspired, but he forgot to make sure that actually the estrog is actually kosher, right? Because he got caught in the inspiration part of the mitzvah, right? And then there are some people that are very technical, they're very, very machmir, you know, make sure they always need this lulav. Okay, huh? But they haven't got the warmth, right? They haven't got the love. So you need both. So we know that later on, it brings it a few times to Tanya, that the Zohar says that the Torah mitzvah is like the bird. The Ava and Yira, the love and the fear, is like the wings. Without the wings, the bird doesn't fly. But it needs both wings. It means the Ava and the Yira. So both wings. It's the Ava and the Yira, the love and the fear. Okay, so that's the shot. So therefore, a Benyani needs Ava and Yira in order to really propel the observance of mitzvahs. Not doing anything Hashem doesn't want. And as we said before, with the Benyani, what we mean by that is not only doing technical wrong things, but even doing anything that's going to distance us from Hashem, anything that's unholy, anything that's not Hashem Shemayim, which is ultimately Benyani, not just the Isur, but even the things which are permissible, the eating properly, the sleeping properly, everything, right? In order to be the Benyani, in order to aspire to be the Benyani, it needs Avavir. Now, of course, that's relevant to us as well, even though we might not be quite Benyanis yet, right? It's the same thing. What if we learn, if we aspiring Bayanese, we have to engage in this, what he's talking about in this parak. And that is, we have to engage in that concept of thinking about the greatness of Hashem and understanding and letting it motivate us, letting it inspire us to love Hashem more and fear Hashem more. The problem, however, is this. And this is the next part of this parak. The second foundational rule. And there's a big problem. And there's a number of answers to this problem, or a number of solutions. But now we're going to learn about one. And that is that most of us actually today particularly are not capable of really giving birth of true love and fear of Hashem. Why? I mean, we say we do. We get excited about Yiddishkeit, and so we should. But that's not real love of Hashem, right? That's, by the way, that's why, you know, always have these two things when we learn Tanya. I said this in the very beginning many times. On the one hand, everything is relevant to us because it changes our goal and it pushes us a little bit. Now then, we have to be very honest and not talk ourselves into it that we are holding by levels that we're not holding by. There was a very big chassid, I'm sure I've told this story before, but there was a very big chassid, his name was Radatz, Rabbi Zohar Tzvi Chen. He was in the tops, right, the time of the Rebbe Rashab. He was a Talmud, he started off in the yeshiva of the Rebbe Rashab. I think I told the story, that the Rebbe Rashab said about him, was one time, him and another chassid, they were davening very, very deeply. He said, daven with amazing love of Hashem. He said, Dak Mamish, do what it says here. Before I go, there was another, just to tell you, like I was in the old chassidim, like they really felt the love of Hashem, right? There was a chassid called Rav Mayor. He told a story, I think, about his father-in-law, and whatever, a big chassid. He once had a Fabrengen, and he took a lot of L'chaim. And he was walking home with Fabrengen, and he was a bit tipsy, and whatever the case, and he was saying, I love him, I love him, I love him. So I think his grandchildren, he says, Zayda, who do you love? He said, the Eibishter, right? He really loves the Eibishter. Okay. So this Radatz, he was, one time the Rebbe Rashab, there was in the Babaj, they used to have the minyan for Shacharis in the morning. All the Bokrim would daven, they would daven nicely and slowly and as best as possible. Then there was like a number of Bokrim who would be in a room next door and they would keep davening for a number of hours and they would be very steeped if they were on the level. And one time there was about 30 Bokrim davening in this room and the Rebbe Rashab walked into the room. And people noticed that the Rebbe Rashab walked in, so they stopped. They stopped the davening, and they, you know, so, except for two. There were two chassidim that were so involved. I think I've told this story, and they were so involved, they didn't even notice the Rebbe Rashab. One of them was Radatz. And Rebbe Rashab said that for those two bachrim was worth the whole Tokhis. Remember, the rest is bonus, right? The rest is profit. We covered the expenses with these two guys. Okay. So, but nevertheless, the Radatz, who always davening, the years and years and years of him building Avas Hashem, when he on his deathbed, someone asked him, Nu Reb David, did you reach Avas Hashem? Did you reach the love of Hashem? So, being who he was, he couldn't really deny it, but he didn't want to acknowledge it either, even him. He said, Nu Akitzel Giton. He said, a little tickle, maybe. Right. So, real Avas Hashem in the heart, emotional love of Hashem, although we can taste it sometimes for a few moments and that, but it's actually very difficult. Because you know why? Because it requires not loving anything else. It's an exclusive love, right? No, to say that we love Hashem, so then, you know, why do we eat extra pizza last night if we love Hashem so much, right? So it's very hard to actually reach and to, because we are people who by default love everything else. Besides Hashem.
And if he is everything, then you can't love anything.
Correct. Exactly. Yeah. Particularly because he's everything. Exactly,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
So anything that we love as an independent thing, right, contradicts the love of Hashem, really, right?
I'm
not a bad. But one second, we'll see. We're aspiring babies, so it must be relevant to us, this. See, so now what he does is he establishes a very important concept, says like this. And he continues. He says, yes, sir, Al-Kain. It's like a middle page there with a dot, you see there? Yes, sir, Al-Kain, even more so. Sorry, Hleida, Klal, Godel, Ba'aveda, Sabay, Labayin. You have to understand a very important principle. Shagam, Im Ein Yad, Sichloi, Veruach, Binosoi, Maseges. Even if a person, which is probably all of us, most of us, that the extent of his intellect and the spirit of his Bina is not enough, will not reach. To actually give birth to love of Hashem in his heart, which means in the revealed part of his heart, that means that his heart should be burning with fire. And a desire, and this desire, and this yearning, and this attraction, which can mamash be felt in the heart. To cleave to Hashem. Most people are not able to actually to do that. What could he do? Rak, what he could do, with also a lot of work. What he could do is he could reach a hidden love in his brain and in the hidden recesses of his heart. What does that mean? Say like this. In order to understand this, we have to understand the following principle. So, we've said in the very beginning of Tanya, we just said now the last page, that thinking about something gives birth to emotion. That's why Chochma Minah called mother and father. Remember that, right? So how does that work? How does it work with the greatness of Hashem? How does it work with anything that a person thinks about, for that matter, right? But let's talk about greatness of Hashem. Let's say a person learns. He learns a lot of Chassidus, let's say, right? A lot of Kabbalah, a lot of Pnimi Sator. He learns about the greatness of Hashem. He understands that he's spent years thinking about it. He knows the world is nothing, right? Okay. So what's the conclusion? He comes to a conclusion. But the conclusion initially is in the brain, not in the heart. That's how it works, right? He comes to a conclusion that really, and he believes it, that nothing else worth pursuing other than Hashem. Right? Nothing else worth loving other than Hashem. Does he feel that love in his heart? No, not yet. Or maybe never. But he has that, there's like what we call the emotion within the brain. Right? Before Chassidus explains elsewhere, I don't know if it's exactly the same idea as here, but it's more or less the same thing. That before, you know, we've talked about this before, that for intellect to come down to emotion, it's actually hard. Right? On any level, really, without burning love, even just to apply it. There shouldn't be cognitive dissonance, right? Why? Because the transition from intellect to emotion is a big transition. It's very, very opposite. Like, yeah. But what happens is, before it comes down to the heart, there's a kind of intellectual emotion, which is oxymoron, but nevertheless there is. In other words, there's a part of our thinking that is pure thinking. We're just intellectualizing. But then, even in the world of intellect, that intellectual concept gives birth to a conclusion. Wow, okay, so I've understood that. That's amazing. That means that I can't pursue anything else besides Hashem. That's really, it's still in the brain, it's still intellectualizing it, but it's a real bit of an emotional intellectualization. Does that make sense? Yeah. Then what happens is, hopefully, if a person's got proper das and they can really do this, it will come down to the heart and be revealed in the heart as a full-blown emotion, right? Now the truth is that even in the heart there's two stages. Because later we're going to talk about that we all have a kind of, later it talks about an intrinsic hidden love that we all have. And now he's talking about something else. Even in the heart sometimes there's a kind of, okay, I have a desire to do something. It's not full blown yet. It's kind of a cold emotion, but it's there, right? So it could even be in the heart also in two levels until it gets to a full blown romantic love with Hashem kind of thing, right? So he says like this, before he talked about the necessity of really giving birth to a full blown emotional love, he says, how about if you can't do that, which is most of us, right? But he says what we can do, maybe, is at least to give birth to a intellectual love. Or a hidden emotional love, at least, right? Hainun, he says like this, what does it mean? Shalev mevin b'ruach choch v'nose sh'omoy v'lus etzav v'ruchu d'kula kamei kalachash v'mamish. That the heart, and at least it's a really intellectual place. We've come to the belief, we've come to the conviction at least. It's not so much emotional, but at least some sort of conviction. That we understand how nothing is significant in the face of Hashem, al shel al kein, which therefore we understand yasa lo yizbarech shetich le'elav nefesh kol chay. Therefore, it's sort of becoming to Hashem that we should just turn to Him, ledovek tekliv to Him, lekala bo'ira, and to incorporate ourselves in His light. V'gam nafshe v'rucha shebekika yaslein, and the nefesh understands it, and the ruach and the nefesh and every part of us understands liyos kolos elav b'chasheka v'chafeitza, that we should just yearn for Him. In fact, if we really did this honestly, what would be our conclusion? Like Nodav and Avihu, even though you're not supposed to remain there, but we'd actually come to the conclusion that really this world is stupid. That really we're better off not remaining in this world. We should really just, Anashama should go up and cleave to Hashem, right? And we understand, however, we understand, but then we understand that we're not going anywhere because Anashama is in our body. And we are trapped, and Hashem is trapped in our body. Right? This should be the conclusion that we come to. This is the conclusion we come to. That really, the only thing is we should really incorporate ourselves in the light of Hashem, which means Hashem should really leave this stupid existence and just become one with Hashem. But we know that's not happening because Hashem is trapped in the body. It's trapped in the body, says, like a living widow. You know, a living widow is like an aguna, almost, right? Like a chained woman, right? Someone who can't find a husband because he disappeared. That's the original aguna, right? So in other words, she's not connected, but she's trapped. She wants to go. She wants to find a husband, but she can't, right? And we understand that v'les machshava diloin tvisa beklal, we understand the way that Hashem is in this body, we can never even grasp Hashem in any sort of slight way. However, we do know, this is the end process thinking, that we actually could connect to Hashem. In other words, part of our thinking is really better off not being in the body, but then we understand actually, no, Hashem wants us to cleave to Him. And we can cleave to Him in the body. How? There's only one way, however. This world is not going to do it. What will do it is, in this world, unless we take hold of and we grab and we enclose ourselves, we immerse ourselves in Torah mitzvahs. Right? Like we learned in the very beginning of Tanya about learning Torah, it's like hugging the king. Are we hugging the king in Gashmias? Are we hugging the king the way the king came down to our level, how he put on multiple clothing? It doesn't matter. Once you hug the king, even if you're hugging his 25th jacket and coat, you're hugging him. So you got him, right? So therefore, what will learning this thing, even if you don't give birth to emotional love, but you have this intellectual love at least, what's going to happen? The Ilazois, we understand that therefore this is the end of the story. So what should we do now? The Ilazois, Yosselehen, what's good for the Nefesh, for the Ruach, for the Neshama? Lechapkoi, just to hug Hashem, b'chol lei, with our whole heart, for Nefesh and Moed. To do more than we can, just as much as we can, just to hug the King. Dainu, that means, in other words, Kiyum atariyag mitzvahs amaisa v'dibra, to keep mitzvahs in action and in speech, v'chayu machshava, and in thought, which is The fourth part is that Sogas Yedias HaTorah, it's understanding of Torah, canal, like we said before. Yeah? So that's possible. That is possible. That's in within the reach, on some level. In other words, he can be a person that's just not on the level. By the way, a person cannot be on the level for many reasons. Sometimes it could be that a person not on the level to really develop an emotional love, not because he's stupid, not because he can't understand it deeply enough. It's some of the stuff is very deep. It can be understood by many people, and yet even understand it very deep, and even if they good das, and even if they immerse themselves for hours and hours thinking about it, not necessarily will result in an emotional love because our heart is blocked. Our previous engagements with materialism and materialistic things sometimes makes it difficult, right? It's very hard to break the, right? Often the heart is encased in a very thick shell, which was created by all our indulgence in this world, right? That's something he talks about later. I mean, that's part of the thing, right? You can't just one day decide, you know what, okay, I'm going to be a bainy, I'm going to daven, I'm going to learn, I'm sure I'm going to give birth to an emotional love of Hashem. No, you're full of blockages, right? Okay, so that's years of work to take care of that blockage. Sorry? Yeah, exactly. Exactly, right? But, he says, that a lot of people cannot give birth to a real emotional love, for whatever reason. Because someone was indulgent in not natural madrega, but because we have an nefesh habamis. Nefesh habamis is not
so
penetrating the heart is very difficult, even the nefesh lekis heart.
But we've all come in at a different madrega.
Yeah.
So does that not mean that we have restrictions
to how? No, but we've all come to a madrega of how much we can understand, what level we can reach. But by default, supposedly everyone should be able to reach some level of Avas Hashem. The problem is that by the time we get around to it, we've already been quite immersed in this world, right? We've eaten, we've slept, we've emboldened the Nefesh HaBamis. So penetrating the heart is very difficult. I'm just giving one idea of why it's so difficult to give birth to an emotional love of Hashem.
Lisa, I don't understand what you're asking. So I'm that understanding that we can develop intellectually, I'm wondering if it can be restricted by
even the intellectual love. Ah, yes. So later he's going to give another solution for someone who can't even do that. But on some level, people could. I mean, when we talk about learning Chassidus, for example, learning about the greatness of Hashem, yes. Everyone comes into the world with different intellectual capacity. But that doesn't matter. That doesn't mean that people can't reach this conclusion that everything's bottled to Hashem and there's nothing worth pursuing other than Hashem. Every person has the ability to reach that on some level. There are people who are gifted with a brain that they could go very, very deep into these ideas, maybe, but
that's your intellect. That's the level of intellect, but not the level of your soul. The soul is all.
No, but the soul, but the intellect can give birth to intellectual love. That's the idea.
The intellect can what?
Can give birth to intellectual love.
Yes.
It means that you'll have a tough. Every person's madrega means you'll have a different war, but we're talking about the ability to overcome the war.
And therefore,
I'll give you an example. I just heard a story. I'll give you an example of what I mean. I just heard a story this morning. It's about Bitochen. It's a beautiful story, actually. But maybe it answers the question also. Like, certain madregas can only reach certain things. So there was a big tzaddik called Reb Zusha Vanipoli. And it says about Reb Zusha Vanipoli. And he said when he walked into a city and wanted to collect money, let's say, for tzedakah or make whatever, he knew before he walked into the city how much he's going to raise. He knew because he had Ruach HaKodesh. So he knew how much Hashem is destined for him to raise in that city. So he made his ishtadlis, he made the money, and he left. There was never any problem about the I should have done more, I should have done less. He knew this is what he has to raise. So they say that his son said, I'm not on the madrega of my father. That to have Ruach HaKodesh to know that when I go into the city, how much I'm going to make. But I am on the madrega that when I leave the city, I'm perfectly 100% certain that was what I was supposed to make. Right? So there's one great Hasidic Rebbe, he says that the son's madrega was even higher than the father's. What he meant by that was, no, father's was higher, right? In other words, yeah, some people have high neshamas, they can tap into higher things. But in terms of being consistently connected to Hashem, he says the Beinoni path is for everyone. And the Beinoni path comes through love of Hashem, which can be, which we'll explain more in a minute, it can be reached not for everyone emotionally, but can be reached intellectually. Maybe that love will be a different type of love if it turns into Madrega, but it will still inspire Torah mitzvahs. Maybe the low Madrega, when he puts on tefillin, won't reach the higher levels of the tefillin like the other tzaddik does. Yeah, but he'll do the mitzvah, he'll do it with the greatest input. Because that's the point of Tanya. The point of Tanya is, it's not about Madregas when it comes to Machshava Dibura Maisa. It's about hard work. How you do the mitzvah, right? But yeah, the depth of understanding, of course, is our understanding of Torah doesn't come anywhere even remotely near to the understanding of a great Talmud Chacham or a rabbi of the Gemara. Even our mitzvahs, we put on the same tefillin as Moshe Rabbeinu put on. Yeah, he was able to understand and to reach and to connect the higher worlds when he put his tefillin that we can't do, but the same tefillin at the end of the day, right? So that, yeah, so that's the same. Okay, so what happens? It says like this. This whole thing he just described. So when you go deeply into this idea about at least in the hidden parts of your heart and brain, and then what happens is you want to walk the talk, so to speak, then you actually implement it. You came to this amazing conclusion that there's nothing else worth pursuing other than Hashem, and you want to put that into purpose, and you do. You want to do what you concluded with intellectually. I know, that means it inspires you to learn more Torah, to really learn Hashem's Torah, and to toil in Hashem's Torah, day and night in your mouth. And also in action, how you die, in the hands and the other limbs, they start keeping mitzvahs. Why? Based on what you concluded in your brain and even in your heart, intellectually. So what happens is, Hare Tvuna Zu, this understanding sort of bypasses the emotional part. What happens is, your idea that you developed in your brain connects with the mitzvah that you do in action or in thought or in speech. It's a brain and it's life. The gutfin, and it becomes wings to make your Torah mitzvah soar higher, just like it would when it's emotional love. As if you would do it with full-blown, revealed love and fear in your heart.
And
so bypass that revealed emotional yet. Which is a gift from Hashem, really, but we'll soon see. You want to put it on the English?
Yes.
All right, I can see you go. Okay. All right. The Hainu, which emotional love would have meant, with this amazing desire, burning, yearning in his heart for Nafshe Atzme, his thirst for Hashem, right? So in other words, like this. The Zohar says, in order for your mitzvahs to go higher, in order for your mitzvahs to be really inspired, in order to really overcome the struggle, and in order for your mitzvahs and Torah to be elevated to a higher level, not just to get stuck, you need ava v'yira, you need love and fear. However, if you can't develop emotional love and fear, right, and you develop this intellectual conclusion, which is a sort of a love and fear, in your heart and in the recesses of your heart, and that inspires your Torah and mitzvahs, then that intellectual love becomes the same as the emotional love, which the emotional love we know picks up your Torah mitzvahs and takes it to a whole new level. The intellectual love will do the same. Why? Hoyel, because this intellectual thinking, which is what brought Lasek Behem to do the Torah mitzvahs. And without the hisbonus, without that contemplation, you wouldn't have done it. What would you have done? You would have just pursued your bodily needs. Why didn't you? Why did you throw yourself into Torah mitzvahs? Why did you make the priority of your life God? Why did you decide to live a God-centered life? Because you understood it, and it developed a certain conviction in your brain, at least. So it did what the emotion does. It inspired, it pushes, it ignited the journey of being completely one with Hashem. And by the way, because if not for that, we would, by default, we are people who pursue materialism. By the way, even if we pursue materialism with discipline, that's what people misunderstand. Tanya is not about a self-help book about being a disciplined person. That's nonsense. You can go to other books for that, right? Because it's about not focusing on your material existence. That's what it's about. It's about bittul to Hashem, not about being a. Yeah, you can reach a level where you only eat protein and not so many carbs without Tanya, right? Even if you like carbs, because you thought about it, you say it's not healthy, and you really want to live physically. You want to live, right? It could be a non-Jew. It could be nothing to do with Torah mitzvahs. But it still fits in, even though it's hard work. But it's not the hard work they talk about in Tanya. It's a big mistake people make. It's not the same thing. It's hard work because it's also self-centered. It's better. It's a more refined person, right? It's a stronger person. It's a thinking person. As you can over here. He's a person that's understands that it's you have to live a healthy life. That there's more to life than just eating and drinking. Okay, that's good. But it's still about self at the end of the day, right? Tanya's not about self. Tanya's about bittul to Hashem. Right? I heard people, they talk about Tanya in modern terms. It makes me so nervous. Like, I heard a podcast, someone was talking about Tanya, that, it's important to be emotionally regulated. That's a very big buzzword nowadays, emotional regulation. Which is exactly what Tanya is all about. Tanya has nothing to do with emotional regulation. Right? Tanya was written for healthy people, not for people who have anxiety and depression. I mean, with a big A and a big D. Right? Tanya was made, of course, Tanya deals with your middle. Actually, it's not about health, it's not about emotional regulation, it's about pushing away all negative thoughts, right? It's not about being balanced, it's not about being tuned. And yeah, obviously you have to do that all to learn Tanya, you have to be a healthy person, but it's not about emotional regulation. It's a nice psychological idea, whether it's good, whether it's bad, I don't know, it's a separate thing. But there's nothing to do with Tanya. And it's why? So our default position is that we want to pursue self. Our needs, our physical needs, either in a very reckless, indulgent way, or in a disciplined way. It doesn't matter. It's the same thing. And that's why he adds and he says, and even if we're talking about a person who's a diligent person by default, he still, by every human being, likes their goof more than the neshama, even the masmir, even that non-serving maiden that we're talking about, right? Even he needs work. Not as much as the one who does 101, but he needs the 100 at least, because he needs still to work, right? Now he says a beautiful idea. One second. This thing is really a gift from Hashem. Because really, I'll explain this outside because it's a very beautiful idea. Really doesn't work like that. Really the person works that you do need emotion. That's why in the beginning he said you need love of Hashem, right? Because love of Hashem changes your personality, transports you to another world. If you have it, the ideal remains to have full-blown emotional love of Hashem. Which is why those people who were able to do that, those great Hasidim, daven for hours each day to try and bring that about, right? Because what you develop in your brain at the end of the day still is detached. So naturally, it doesn't actually do the trick as well as emotional love do. But there's a beautiful Maimar Chazal that says like this, which is always understood differently in a correct way, but over here gives a deeper pshat. There's a saying, Machshava Toiva, the person has a good thought, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Metzarfa L'maisa, Hashem connects it to action. Now normally the way that's understood is if a person had an intention of doing something mitzvah, let's say I really wanted to help someone else, and I was leaving my house and I was about to go to that person's house, and I really was all ready to do the chesed, for example, right? And it didn't work out. The person couldn't do it today, couldn't, wasn't available today, became sick, whatever, right? So I lost out on doing the mitzvah that I intended to do. So the Chazal tell us that Hashem considers it as if I've done the mitzvah. Okay, that's what it means. Whereas Chazal assure us that it's not true with Averis. If we have an intention to do something bad, Hashem doesn't say, I'm going to count like you did something bad already. You only did something bad when you do something bad. Not that having a sinful thought is a good idea, but it also affects a person spiritually, but it's not, if you say, you know, I'm all ready to eat trefe, and then the restaurant closed down. Right? Hashem doesn't say, oh, you only didn't need it because the restaurant closed down, I'm still going to count like you did it. Not true. Okay, that's the chesed of Hashem. Okay. But in Tanya, he says, no. Pshat's different. It's deeper. Now, Hashem gave us a gift, what he's talking about here in this parak. The machshava toiva. If a person had a good thought, meaning he developed love of Hashem intellectually, he did it properly with conviction and a real conclusion, HaKadosh Baruch Hu mitzarfa l'maisa. Hashem will allow that thought to be connected. That's the word mitzarf actually means. Tziruf means to join. Hashem will allow that to join to your action. In other words, really, it should have to go to the heart first, but not everyone's capable of doing that. So what Hashem does, he says, if you develop that ava and yira in your brain, so it's machshava, it's a thought, Hashem mitzarfa, Hashem connects it to action. So Hashem creates that bypass. Right? Hashem creates that thing that he allows us to kind of skip in a way, the full-blown emotion.
Knowing us is
love. And therefore that the intellectual love will be able to inspire the Torah mitzvahs and elevate the Torah mitzvahs. Like the Zohar says, the two wings of Ava Vayira make the bird fly. That will happen even with intellectual love and fear. And that doesn't mean it's easy. It's not the intellectual love. You need a lot of learning, a lot of thinking, a lot of reflection. Right? But the more we learn, the more we reflect, the more it makes a dent, and the more we inspire the Torah mitzvahs. That's the relevance of the parak. The relevance of the parak is that on some level, the more we in our mind, now, do we do it full blown, or are we going to learn Chassidus tomorrow and understand and decide there's nothing else, not even the minutest thing is worth indulging in other than Hashem? Probably not, but we can make a dent. And we saw that, right? People who really live by what it says, not just intellectually, remotely, because it still needs work. He doesn't say just understand the idea. He says it's still going to be love and fear in your brain. It's still going to translate into the emotional part of intellect, which is also hard. Right? In other words, as a purely intellectual exercise, you can learn very deep Chassidus and do nothing right. Because it's just an idea. It's a very big academic exercise. Beautiful. But no, if you learn it, and you think about it, and you apply, what does this mean to me? What does it mean to my, you know, what does it mean? Am I maybe need to upgrade my Torah? You know, all that kind of stuff, right? And that inspires greater observance. That's one step in the right direction. One step in implementing what it says here. It's not reaching it, but it's a step closer.
Is that because you're on the bypass?
Yeah, I'm saying you haven't implemented the full bypass yet, but at least on some level. You know, we're all capable on some level on having the intellectual ideas of Chassidus make a difference. Maybe we'll have one less pursuit of materialism, and maybe we'll be inspired to push ourselves more. Whatever the inspiration is. All right.